श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग। नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 12 द परफेक्ट सोसाइटी द फोर स्पिरिचुअल क्लासेस टेक्स्ट नंबर 7। वर्जयेत् प्रमदागाथाम् अगृहस्थो बृहद्व्रतः इन्द्रियाणि प्रमाथीनि हरन्ति अपि यतेर्मुनः। वर्जयेत् प्रमदागाथाम् अगृहस्थो बृहद्व्रतः इन्द्रियाणि प्रमाथीनि हरन्ति अपि यतेर्मनः। वर्जयेत् प्रमदागाथाम् अगृहस्थो बृहद्व्रतः इन्द्रियाणि प्रमाथीनि हरन्ति अपि यतेर्मनः। वर्जयेत् प्रमदागाथाम् अगृहस्थो बृहद्व्रतः इन्द्रियाणि प्रमाथीनि हरन्ति अपि यतेर्मनः। वर्जयेत् प्रमदागाथाम् अगृहस्थो बृहद्व्रतः इन्द्रियाणि प्रमाथीनि हरन्ति अपि यतेर्मनः। वर्जयेत् प्रमदागाथाम् अगृहस्थो बृहद्व्रतः इन्द्रियाणि प्रमाथीनि हरन्ति अपि यतेर्मनः। वर्जयेत् प्रमदागाथाम् अगृहस्थो बृहद्व्रतः इन्द्रियाणि प्रमाथीनि हरन्ति अपि यतेर्मनः। वर्जयेत् प्रमदागाथाम् अगृहस्थो बृहद्व्रतः इन्द्रियाणि प्रमाथीनि हरन्ति अपि यतेर्मनः। वर्जयेत् मस्ट् गिव् अप् प्रमदागाथाम् टॉकिंग विथ विमेन अगृहस्थः। A person who has not accepted the grihasthashram, a brahmachari or a sannyasi, brihadvrataha, invariably observing the vow of celibacy, indriyani, the senses, pramadhini, almost always unconquerable, haranti, take away, api, even, yateh, of the sannyasi. Manaha, the mind. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. A brahmachari, or one who has not accepted the grihastha ashram, family life, must rigidly avoid talking with women or about women, for the senses are so powerful that they might agitate even the mind of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order of life. Purport. Brahmacharya essentially means the vow not to marry, but to observe strict celibacy, prahad prataha. A brahmachari or sannyasi should avoid talking with women or reading literature concerning talks between man and woman. The injunction restricting association with women is the basic principle of spiritual life. Associating or talking with women is never advised in any of the Vedic literatures. The entire Vedic system teaches one to avoid sex life so that one may gradually progress from brahmacharya to grihastha, from grihastha to vanaprastha, and from vanaprastha to sannyas, and thus give up material enjoyment, which is the original cause of bondage to this material world. The word brihad vrataha refers to one who has decided not to marry, or in other words, not to indulge in sex life throughout his entire life. Text number 8. Kesha prasadha non marda snap Snapanabhyandanadikam Guru Stri Bhir Yuvati Bhi Karayenatmano Yuva. If the wife of the spiritual master is young, a young brahmachari should not allow her to care for his hair, massage his body with oil, or bathe him with affection like a mother. Purport. The relationship between the student or disciple and the wife of the spiritual master or teacher is like that between son and mother. A mother sometimes cares for her son by combing his hair, massaging his body with oil, or bathing him. Similarly, the wife of the teacher is also mother, Guru Patni, and therefore she may also care for the disciple in a motherly way. If the wife of the teacher is a young woman, however, a young brahmachari should not allow such a mother to touch him. This is strictly prohibited. There are 7 kinds of mothers. Atma mata guru patne, brahmani raja patnika, dhenur dhatri tatha prithvi, saptaita matara smritaha. These mothers are the original mother, the wife of the teacher or spiritual master, the wife of a brahmana, the king's wife, the cow, the nurse, and the earth. Unnecessary association with women, even with one's mother, sister, or daughter, is strictly prohibited. This is human civilization. A civilization that allows men to mix unrestrictedly with women is an animal civilization. In Kali Yuga, people are extremely liberal, but mixing with women and talking with them as equals actually constitutes an uncivilized way of life. Text 9. Nanvagni pramadanama ghrita kumbhasam appuman sutam apiraho jahyad anyadaya avadartha krit. Woman is compared to fire and man is compared to a butter pot. Therefore, a man should avoid associating even with his own daughter in a secluded place. Similarly, he should also avoid association with other women. One should associate with women only for important business and not otherwise. Purport. If a butter pot and fire are kept together, the butter within the pot will certainly melt. Woman is compared to fire and man is compared to a butter pot. However advanced one may be in restraining the senses, it is almost impossible for a man to keep himself controlled in the presence of a woman, even if she is his own daughter, mother, or sister. Indeed, his mind is agitated even if one is in the renounced order of life. Therefore, Vedic civilization carefully restricts mingling between men and women. If one cannot understand the basic principle of restraining association between man and woman, he is to be considered an animal. That is the purport of this verse. Om Agyanatmirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So these set of verses, first let's take a step back. This is Narada Muni speaking to Yudhishthir Maharaj. And this conversation between the two is being relayed by Shukadev Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj, who's been cursed to die in 7 days. So about 3 days of discussion of Bhagavatam, you could roughly say, is over, because 7 cantos are here. 3 or 4 days. 3 or 4 more are remaining before the deadly, poisonous Takshaka will come and kill Parikshit Maharaj. So for a person who's on his deathbed, literally speaking, almost, talking about not associating with women is like the least important topic right now, right? He's at the point of dying. So why is this even a subject matter that Shukadev Goswami has to relate to Parikshit Maharaj? Just as on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the war is about to begin. And it's the largest fratricidal war in history. And Krishna speaks certain things that don't seem directly connected to the issue at hand. Basically, Arjun wants to know, I don't want to kill these people, why are you forcing me to kill? And Krishna speaks about the demigods, grains, sacrifice and rain. He speaks about Ashtanga Yoga, he speaks a little bit of some other things here and there. He speaks about how the 4 varnas and ashram have been created by him. And so it may seem tangential, but then there is a need for it. So these are not one of those useless kind of verses. This is not that. So this is very relevant because Shukadev Goswami is speaking it. Now, to understand the subject matters given in the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and to be able to live a devotional life, it is said that we need 4 things. One is Shastra, the philosophy. Then we need Shastra, which literally means weapon, but actually intelligence. Intelligence to take Shastra and how to apply in life. Third, we need culture. A framework within which those principles can be applied. Without culture, just philosophy, we wouldn't know what to do with it. And the fourth is called mantra, that brings about purification in such a way that the culture and the philosophy become clearer and more pronounced and focused. So culture is considered to be like a pot, a container that contains the philosophy. It is how everything is held together. Otherwise, you may have the best ideology, but no supportive culture, then the ideology cannot be lived by anyone. It becomes irrelevant. In fact, it becomes really weird. Now we see in societies across the world, when culture breaks down, the first thing that gets compromised is the religion, or the philosophy, if you will. Because only philosophy without culture makes persons superly speculative. Or the danger is to become so sahajiya-like because there isn't the proper framework to live within. So we hear and understand these set of verses in this context, that these are culture, elements of culture. And these elements of culture are necessary so that the actual philosophy, that is to remember Krishna all the time, can thrive. If this culture is not there, then it becomes a challenge. So in culturally, it's talking about how to become a responsible brahmachari. Because a responsible brahmachari will become a responsible grihastha. An irresponsible brahmachari will become an irresponsible grihastha. In fact, it will become a grihamedhi. If in the young student phase of life, men are not trained properly, they will cause havoc in society. And the havoc is what Arjuna is very concerned about. When he's standing between the two armies and he sees all these men on both sides standing ready for war, one of his biggest concerns is, if all these men will die, then all the women of society become vulnerable to predatory sort of men. And that predatory behavior of men will cause, he uses the word Varna Sankara. Varna Sankara means unwanted, Prabhupada uses the phrase unwanted progeny. Because men are the worst perpetrators when it comes to such behavior. Because if they're not trained and they can exploit women. Because between men and women, both any living entity in the material world has an exploitative tendency, no doubt. But the soul in the man's body, whereas the male, you find the exploitative feature more predominant, because it's the illusory Purusha in terms of enjoyer. That's why men are called Purusha. The male is the Purusha. Purusha is the sense of enjoying, the sense of exploitation is very strong. So Arjuna's concern is that if men are not trained properly, they're responsible men are not there in society, then the irresponsible men will cause havoc. And irresponsible men will give birth to irresponsible men. And it will get perpetuated like that, such that the whole society will get destroyed. So these verses then bring to light how important it is that young men between the ages of 5 and 25, boys and men, are trained properly. So they learn how to respect women. They learn how to respect money. They learn how to respect property. They learn how to respect the things in this world. So the exploitative mentality is curbed. The most Prabhupada says in one lecture, he uses the phrase or the term bachelor to mean brahmacharis, unmarried. And he said, remain bachelor if you want, but don't become bachelor daddy. Meaning don't cross the line. But that comes with training. And so here are these points of culture. Because this young boy between the ages of 5 and 25 lives in the house of the guru, then there is the guru patni who's taking care as the mother. So then it says how one should live. So overall, at least this verse today, it says, Varjayet Pramada Gatham. Varja means to give up. Pramada Gatham, speaking with women. Who should not speak with women? Not speak literally doesn't mean you put a screen here and avoid people, or when they're walking on, they come in front of you and you suddenly look down and look away. Not that kind of behavior. But means, if not necessary, there's no need for a conversation. Agrahastha, one who's not a grahastha, it's a brahmachari or a sannyasi, especially brihad vrataha. Vrata means vow, and brihad means the great vow. What's the greatest vow? To remain celibate. That's not easy, therefore it's called greatest vow. Because indriyani pramathini, the senses are very easily agitated. And they are easily agitated, even haranti api yater manaha. Yati, haranti apir ater manaha. Yati. Yati means a renounced person. Like sometimes when you hear about Ramanujacharya, he was called Yatiraj, the king of renounced persons. So Narada Muni is saying that even the most renounced person, his mind can also get agitated if he speaks beyond necessity with a woman. Because by that crossing the line, he opens himself for becoming vulnerable. It is not that the women are enticing him. This has nothing to do. In fact, perhaps women don't even pay attention. But it's the inner agitation of the mind and senses that are awakened. So it's being referred to as that one should be careful. So Prabhupada writes, the injunction restricting the association with women is the basic principle of spiritual life. Such that they're trained so that when that association happens, it is that they know where that line is. And Prabhupada's writing that in the modern context, that line becomes very, very fine or doesn't exist at all. And more there is this kind of mixing, the more unruly society becomes. So then in the next verse, there is very specific instruction that the wife of the guru, who's supposed to actually take care of these young boys and men, if she, the age difference between her and the brahmachari is significant, that she is significantly older, like the age gap is as much as one's own mother's age gap, then she might care for this young boy like a mother would, by applying oil to his hair, massaging his body and giving him a bath. But if that age differential is not significant, and that's why it says if the wife of the guru is young, then one should not, because it agitates severely. Then Prabhupada writes, a civilization that allows men to mix unrestrictedly with women is an animal civilization. Back again to this point, it's a cultural issue. And the culture being that in student life, the main focus of life is study, not study of women, just studying of scripture. And for women, it's not study of men, it's study of their curriculum. And that's why you see in olden ages, the concept of co-ed was not there. On Saturday, I was here cleaning Prabhupada's altar, and I was having a conversation with Carlos. And he was appreciating the points though in the purport, and one of the things he was bringing up is, you know, this may seem in one culture appropriate, but that he comes from a different culture. He comes from the Latin American culture, I believe, where embracing each other is part of what you do, and if you don't embrace each other, it's almost like you've neglected someone. It's an insult. That's how I understood it. And my point was, hey, that may be true in the adults, but even within those cultures, that's mostly Catholic background. Am I right? Mostly Catholic background. All Catholic schools have boys separate and girls separate. Then he told me, actually, they have separate schools altogether, not just they're in the same facility. The whole school is different. So it's regardless of this culture, that culture, this part of the world, that part of the world, that basic understanding has always existed. That in student life, the genders are kept separate. After that, there is always interaction, and that's how life has to move. But in student life, they're kept separate. The very modern industrial revolution type society has a co-ed culture. Now, those who are proponents of the co-ed culture, they seem to have very valid reasons why they feel it should be this way. And that's mostly a reactionary measure. Like if some old principle did not work, then the answer is not that you get rid of the principle, but the answer is that you reapply the principle properly. But the modern reactionary method is that old principle did not work, get rid of the principle at all. Or like it's like saying, I opened a case of apples, I got two rotten apples, so either I throw away all the other apples, or I reject eating apples altogether in my life. It doesn't make any sense. But that's how the modern so-called culture has developed, which you see if you ask what is the modern culture, we don't have a clear answer. It's not clear. It's the culture of no culture. It's the culture of anything goes. Prabhupada calls it hedonism. Hedonism means the culture of rampant sense gratification. Feel like it? Do it. Because you're a free person. You can do what you like. Then this principle is here, which a woman is compared to fire and the poor man is compared to a butter pot. Women are fire-like. Why not the other way around? Poor women are like gentle, soft butter pots and the men are like fires ravaging. So it's not like this is biased towards the men, poor butter. And look at the women, the raging fire. This is coming from Shukadeva Goswami's mouth. Now, Shukadeva Goswami, we understand, is beyond bodily conception of life. We know the story in the beginning of Bhagavatam. When Shukadeva Goswami was born, he left home and walked away. And Vyasadeva was running behind him. Oh, my dear son, please come back. And the specific scene is that Shukadev Goswami, because he's not in the bodily conception of life, his dress consists of the four directions, which is a nice way of saying he didn't put on any clothes. He was dressed by the directions. And he was young, he was 16 years old, very, very handsome, good looking. It's not because karmically good looking, a person who's self-realized is very, very attractive. And he was walking, and there were some young women bathing in a lake. So, naturally, when they're bathing and some man walks by, out of shyness, they would want to cover themselves. But when Shukadev Goswami walked by, they did not cover themselves because they did not feel that their shyness or their chastity was being violated by him at all. But Vyasadev came and they covered themselves. It's not like Vyasadev was lusty or anything. He's the Supreme Personality. But they could distinguish that this person is, he's Grahastha, but this person is totally different. They didn't feel as if Shukadev Goswami is agitated or that he was going to encroach upon their privacy, even if he was there. It's because he's so relieved of this bodily conception of life. So from his mouth, first of all, these words are being spoken. Second, I was also thinking, why men are compared to butter pot and women are compared to fire? So I don't have a clear answer, but I have a thought. One is that the butter always comes to fire. The fire doesn't go to the butter. Correct? This fire, it's not like if you keep the butter pot there, then the fire on the gas stove is going to go up to the butter pot. I think the butter pot has to come to the fire, and that's when it melts. So that's my understanding. That's why the men are compared to butter. This is my very special realization. So then, it is given as to why. It says the butter pot and fire are kept together. The butter within the pot will certainly melt. Men stop being men when they are in the presence of women. They become disarmed. Oh, I should say it this way. They allow themselves to become disarmed. Let's put it that way. It's because that sense of disarming awakens within them the predatory, the exploitative tendency. So here, Prabhupada writes, however advanced one may be in restraining the senses, it is almost impossible for a man to keep himself controlled in the presence of a woman, even if she is his own daughter, mother, or sister. Now, because these situations happen, it's there in scripture. Now, one may think, what was Shukadev Goswami thinking? This is Narada and Yudhishthira Maharaj speaking. Elevated personalities. Why are they speaking this one? One, because they are the ones guiding society. And two, they are the ones responsible for putting together a culture for people to live in. They themselves are not subjected to this. But the point is that the material energy, this is the principle, either for women or for men, the material energy is highly highly agitated and extremely alluring. Because Krishna is very alluring, attracting. He's called Krishna, the all attractive. So his external energy is also very attracting. In fact, so strongly attracting that even for a person who has his senses very restrained can become very vulnerable against the power of the material energy. In fact, we know all through history Oh, so many so-called great persons became very vulnerable in the presence of such manifestation of the material energy. The reason this attraction is there between man and woman is because Prabhupada said that this attraction is what makes the world move. And if this attraction were totally gone, suddenly the world won't move forward. Generations won't come forward. The karmic manifestation of people doesn't come into existence. And so this, the male-female attraction, attracting principle has been there for time immemorial. And in this high energy of attraction, there are a few souls who make a commitment to not be part of this kind of attraction, but rather the attraction of the soul towards Krishna. So that's moving against the current. And to move against that current requires, of course, one's own determination, and even more importantly, Krishna's mercy. And for that, the mantra is very necessary. Because without purification of heart by mantra, culture, philosophy, and the intelligence are not sufficient. They fall short. For example, we know there are so many persons, perhaps ourselves included, we know the philosophy very well. We can repeat it nicely, but we fall prey to our own weaknesses. And that can be of any type. For each one, it's a different kind of weakness they fall prey to. But we find that we fall prey to it. Even if we know the philosophy, I'm sure after we indulge in something that is not wholesome, we can tell ourselves 20 shlokas, 50 quotes, that why we shouldn't have done what we did. But the purification of heart, the reaching out for Krishna's mercy is not strong. So philosophy may be there, the framework may be there, everything's there. But that dose of Krishna's mercy is what is needed to transcend the situation. So then mantra becomes very, very critical. And that will help provide sort of a view and context to, I'm trying to go back to Krishna and I'm being pulled so hard, pulled so forcefully by the material energy that if I don't hold on to Krishna's lotus feet strongly, I'm going to get pulled, sucked in like anything. And what's the consequence? Many persons indulge in activities without caring for consequences. This is where the modern so-called culture is different from what we say traditional culture. The traditional culture is that which forces us to consider consequences, short-term and long-term consequences. The modern culture says, forget consequences. It's enjoyable, right? Do it. Who cares for the consequence? This is Charvak Muni philosophy. Because there is a ghee pot being talked about, we should say something about ghee. Charvak Muni said, Rinam Kritva Ghritam Pivet. Even if you have to go into debt, that's fine. You should eat nice ghee. Bhasmi bhutasya dehasya kim punaragata. That once this body dies, it turns into a pot of ash. Who's going to come? You're not going to live another life. So enjoy this life. Don't worry about all the other consequences. Oh, next life you'll be a monkey or a pigeon. Who cares? Anyone come back to tell me? Oh, I was a monkey in the previous life. You never see what happens in the next life. Did you know what you were in your previous life? No. Do you know what you're going to be in your next life? No. There isn't anything like that. You have this chance, enjoy it. The whole of Vedic scriptures, in fact, all of the religious scriptures, speak of long-term consequences. And the whole idea of modernism is forget about long-term consequences. Some thoughtful people say, for example, the way we are consuming goods and resources on this planet, our grandchildren will not have a planet. There won't be any resources left. Let's be a little bit more thoughtful on how we... That's one side, a few of people. The rest don't care. The amount we consume plastics and oil, and ours is an oil-based culture. He was talking about eating with ghee. Everything we do in our life is oil. The clothes we wear, oil. The food we eat, oil. The cars we run, oil. The gadgets we have, oil. Right? Plastic, nylon, so all oil. But who's thinking about how consumerism is affecting? Few people think. Some people will be thoughtful. Oh yeah, very nice. What's for lunch? It doesn't go beyond a little conversation. So long-term consequences is being spoken here. That this unrestricted mixing, it might seem, what's the harm? Come on, you know, modern people, this is, come on, don't be so old-fashioned. Blah, blah. What's the long-term consequence? The long-term consequence is you miss the boat to Krishna. Is that worth it? And that's what's being spoken. Not only you miss the boat to Krishna, that particular entity or entities have a serious karmic progression of karmic continuation of life. It is filled with suffering and misery and birth and death and old age and disease and all that. The whole package keeps moving again and again and again. So these have context. These have a certain place to consider. And the final point is, if we are on the road to Krishna and there's a slight deviation, let's say a 1 degree deviation. So at the point of divergence, that 1 degree doesn't seem too much. 1,000 miles away, that 1 degree diversion is quite significant. Correct? If I draw a circle, let's say 1,000 mile radius circle of radius 1,000 miles, and at the point of center, I have a deviation of 1 degree. At the circumference, my deviation is very significant. Said another way, I'm driving from here to towards the east. I'm driving on I-90. So I'm headed towards Boston. Somewhere in between, I get I-80 to touch 90. And I'm happily driving, I'm eating popcorn, talking with my friend. And 80 and 90 separate. And because I'm not attentive, I take I-80. At the point, I can see I-90 right there and I-80 right here. And I think, it's only a little deviation, what's the point? I end up in New York, not in Boston. So near the destination, the divergence is very, very large. So what might seem like, come on, only it's a little this, it's a... actually ends up being a very significant consequence. And therefore, Narada and Yudhishthira Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit talk about it because these are significant. It's important to raise our children with proper understanding, so they become responsible citizens of the future, not irresponsible citizens. So that's what is our responsibility, and that's what is the responsibility of the previous generation and the responsibility of the previous generation, to make sure that the philosophy, proper intelligence or discrimination, the culture and the purification are given from one generation to another. So these are worth speaking about. Any comments, questions, anything? Anything from your side? Since this is, I don't want to not... Okay, Jitendra Prabhu, and then Subhal Prabhu. I don't think it's on.
It's interesting you said culture. Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness will be a cultural conquest. Bhakti Siddhanta said the whole problem is uncontrolled senses. And to those who are too attached to sense gratification, the resultant determination of devotional service does not take place. Those are just a few things that came to mind.
Thank you. Subhal Prabhu is going to share with you something.
Hare Krishna. So we're reading Lilamrita up here, but we also have a separate Lilamrita call. And the place we're at is in San...
A little slow. You have a separate Lilamrita call?
Yeah. And so we're reading this part where Prabhupada's already... started the movement in New York and San Francisco, and he just came out of the hospital after a heart attack, and so he's recuperating in something resort near the beach or something. So Jadarani Mataji and Govinda Dasi Mataji and other devotees have come to help Prabhupada, serve Prabhupada. And so I just want to read two paragraphs, and I was hoping maybe you can comment something.
Okay.
So as Jadarani helped Govinda Dasi gather flowers, the two girls talked together. Both had heard the men say that women were less intelligent, and they felt discouraged. Later, Govinda Dasi told Prabhupada about the problem. Is it true, she asked, that because we are women, we won't make advancement as quickly as the brahmacharis? Yes, Prabhupada answered. If you think of yourselves as women, how will you make any advancement? You must see yourself as spirit soul, eternal servant of Krishna. And I really liked that answer, and I was hoping you could... connect this and that.
And. Well, there's nothing to connect. Prabhupada said it so beautifully. It's not that one is a woman or a man that is the issue. It is the identification with that. So recently, I'm sure you heard that lecture called Chanting Without Upadhis. You were there? Yeah, were you there? Yeah. I was not there, but I've been hearing it. The chanting without upadhis. And we can, my understanding of it or appreciation of it is, we cannot chant without upadhi if we don't live without upadhi. If I think of myself as a man, and someone thinks of herself as a woman, or I'm from India, or you know, I have a particular title, whatever, if that's how I live, I cannot chant without upadhis. So the point is that I live, try to live, not I am actually successful at it, I means every one of us tries to live as a servant of Krishna. And that's what is significant. And when we live thinking ourselves as a servant of Krishna, then we can chant as a servant of Krishna. We missed you yesterday at our Bhagavad Gita discussion. And yesterday was this very topic, that it was about the mind being either the friend or the worst enemy. And so the discussion was, when does the mind act as an enemy And when does the mind act as a friend? And the discussion went back and forth, and what we, and the Prabhupada writes in the purport is, when you think of yourself as a servant of Krishna, the mind will always be your friend. When you forget you're a servant of Krishna and you think of yourself identifying with the body, the mind will be your enemy. Because when you think of yourself, or when we think of ourselves as servant of Krishna, Krishna's mercy begins to flow in a particular way. So the exercise was, or the discussion was, in any situation that we are in, a practice that we need to cultivate before it becomes perfection, a practice is, how will a servant of Krishna respond to this situation? And just thinking like that, it brings the necessary protection, it brings the necessary mercy, it brings the right intelligence, it brings the right words, and a person moves towards Krishna. When we forget that, then we become creatures of habit. Habit is to act from a bodily conception. So Prabhupada, when he was in Boston, we heard this, that Prabhupada was received in Boston when he once visited. And at that time, the devotees were not, the temple didn't have enough money. So they picked up, they received Srila Prabhupada at the airport in a taxi. And Prabhupada was sitting in the back seat, and Satsarup Maharaj was sitting in the front, and the taxi driver, as he was driving, he turns to Prabhupada and says, "You're one of them swamis, huh?" And yes. And so he said, "Can you, do you know how to something, like a mystical thing?" Because he thought swami means they can do mystical things, you know, vanish the keys or levitate in the car seat. Can you do anything like that? And Prabhupada says, "No, even better." I'm paraphrasing. Even better. I can enter a room full of naked women and not be disturbed. And the taxi driver didn't know whether. Oh, okay. But then it was a very significant statement that even if a person has all these mystical abilities, can be agitated. And Prabhupada said, "I will never be agitated." Because he's beyond the identification of the body. Prabhupada saw everyone as part and parcel of Krishna. So he empowered his women like anything, to go beyond that bodily conception and do fantastic service. Prabhupada said, they've done fantastic service that even great sannyasis were not able to do. Just by being clear, we are a servant of Krishna. Yeah? Subhal Prabhu, please.
I have one comment and I have one question. The comment is just came to mind because in my work I have a lot of Mexican customers, and all Mexicans are musicians, so somehow or other, you know, they're a big part of the music buying business. They're good customers. So anyway, I get to hear things from them. They're telling me about this big news that happens recently, that this huge gangster had been caught.
El Chapo.
El Chapo. Yeah, some big time, you know, the leader Irania Kashipu, a big controller of the mafia that distribute drugs, you know, in the U.S. Huge. And famous because the guy was very expert in, you know, basically controlling all the different, you know, gangs and things like that. He'd been caught, and then he escapes and caught and escapes. A super, you know, criminal guy. Anyway, he was caught finally because some young girl that is a actress sort of was curious, and somehow or other he got enticed by this young girl, and he made himself vulnerable, and police caught him. Mm-hmm. So even this powerful gangster who everybody was afraid, and he was, you know, like, just because some silly young girl, he makes himself, you know, vulnerable, and then he was cut. So the border.
I asked Ladini Shakti one time, what does El Chapo mean? So she told me it means the dude. It means the dude. So that dude, I was thinking about Ravana. Ravana's prowess was so fantastic. He was very austere. That every day he would perform Abhishek for 1 million Shivalingas. 1 million Shivalingas every day. That was his austerity. And it was because of that austerity he became so strong that he once went to Kailash, and to impress Lord Shiva, he lifted the whole Kailash mountain with Lord Shiva sitting on it. So to curb his pride, Lord Shiva pressed his big toe on the mountain and crushed Ravana under it. Yet this guy is so strong. What was his cause for death? He became enticed by, or he fell for Sita Devi. Much against all the advice, hey Ravana, you're going to kill yourself, you're going to kill the entire kingdom, this is going to get destroyed, don't do it. Oh, I cannot resist myself. He had never seen Sita Devi. He only heard about her. But just by hearing, his lust became so agitated that he had decided to kidnap her even without seeing how she looks. Because Shurpanaka told him, she's very beautiful. All the queens that you have don't match her. That's it. Becomes very, very vulnerable because of that. Whether it's this Chapo or Ravana Chapo with, you know, 10 heads and 20 arms.
The question is, for many years I was involved in, you know, education, children and, you know, youth like that. And one sense is, you know, I'm coming from a culture that is the co-ed culture. So my approach can be, you know, back in time was something more liberal in terms of the mixing of boys and girls like that. And things, you know, also change, you know, for a more traditional, that it goes, you know, that we have to separate them. So, you know, both things has been there, both things, it has devotees within ISKCON that, you know, make a case for traditional type of education and a more liberal type of education arrangement, structure, taking into considerations, you know, the environment, you know, in which the culture that people comes with, you know. And obviously there has been quite an effort to try to come to a you know, balance type of a structure for educating. And we see in Prabhupada's case, he was obviously quite genius too, and he was quite criticized by god brothers of his because of Prabhupada's decision of having within an ashram to have women living in ashram too, and how he have both woman and man serving together, preaching. And Prabhupada was criticized, but his results was, you know, quite evident, you know. So the question is, that balance, to hit that balance, because, you know, we hear, you express it very nicely in the class in terms of the culture and what is those essence that that culture brings, you know, that we have, the principles that we have to apply in education in terms of respect, in terms of discrimination and, you know, the different type of principles that we can have in the education, but that applies very well to the people that comes, you know, that type of culture. If you can comment on that.
Srila Prabhupada was, I would say, very successful because he was able to keep men and women very, very focused on preaching. And when for that higher purpose, it's okay. Here's an example, not necessarily in terms of preaching, but just that contact with women or women contact with men. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a sannyasi was very strict. But there's a pastime in Jagannath Puri that when he was standing at the Garuda Stambha, looking at Jagannath, an elderly lady who was shorter could not see Lord Jagannath. So she climbed up the Garuda Stambha, and in her excitement to see Lord Jagannath, she put one foot on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's shoulder. And Govinda became very agitated that what is she doing? Of course, he is the Supreme Lord, but also he is a sannyasi. And he was chastising the lady, get down, do you know who this is? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stopped him. No, no. Her eagerness to see Jagannath is far superior than mine. So I'm quite all right serving her this way. Same Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who in glorification of Ramananda Rai said, Ramananda Rai can touch these young women, but if I see even a wooden doll shaped like a woman, my mind might get agitated. So Prabhupada is very successful in that sense to bring men and women together and give them like this sharp focus for preaching. Yet, in that, there were accidents, at least a few of them. When I say accident, it's not like major accidents, that a brahmachari decided to get married like that. Because at that point, that particular focus for preaching was mixed with something else as well. But Prabhupada took that risk. Why? Because by his strength of Krishna consciousness, he could take that risk and pull a bunch of people up. Now you take our context now. We don't have Gurukulas, so no one's really living with the Guru. We have mostly children that go to co-ed schools. Parents working in co-ed environments. And it's the temple that they come to once a week or whatever, however regularly. And that's where you say, no co-ed. And somehow it doesn't make sense. So it's not just the institution's responsibility, it's the parents' responsibility as much. And the sense of, in terms of reality, what's going on? The children are in, from Monday through Friday, they're in a co-ed environment. It's the Sunday or evening or sometime where there is separation of boys and girls. Unless the whole family and the whole society and the culture is such that they honor it, excuse me, beyond a point it starts, what's the point here? One will start questioning it. So it's always challenging. And you and I have lived through the challenge in the past few years, so we know what we have experienced. But it's a mixture of many things. So we try to make as relevant as possible from that mixture. And the only way is to give preaching projects. Because when there's a project and towards the expansion of the movement, it is safer. Otherwise, it's heavy social exchange. And what does the social exchange bring? Yeah, everyone's happy and laughing. What's the long-term consequence? Long-term consequence is, where is the individual's Krishna consciousness? Does it really grow or not? That is to be seen. But generally, it's riskier than this is the safer path. But people like, in Kali Yuga, everyone likes to take the riskier path instead of the safer path. Right? Because mode of passion means risk. People like to take risk. In mode of goodness, people are not taking risk like that. They're aware, oh, that's risky. In passion and ignorance, you take risk, or you're totally oblivious to the risk. Oh, what risk? I don't see any risk. And bam, it hits them on the head. Oh, okay. That's the environment. I don't know if I'm really answering your question, but it's just adding more points to it. That is the challenge. That is the challenge. I have a son. I face it every day. And he's at the brink of teenage. So I'm waiting to see what happens. So, but there's also one more thing, you know, on the side of, in the defense of the young generation, when they look up to us as parents and the seniors in the community, I'm not just speaking Chicago, I'm just talking in general. I'm not talking of our community, I'm talking of every senior. And what is our culture? There is the mixing and all that. So for the children, it doesn't mix. What is this? What are they? Why are you trying to put me in a box when I look up? I don't see that. You guys are hypocrites. And the young generation, that's the main thing. We don't like hypocrisy. This or that. It doesn't mean when you're young, I'm like this, and then you can do anything you like. It's just not okay. For example, the statistics in our movement when it comes to successes of marriages. It's a very disappointing metric, right? More than 50% of marriages fail, and large reason they fail, one of the reasons is financial instability. Another reason is adultery. I haven't made a study of what are the reasons within ISKCON, so I don't know the distribution of cases. But out in the world, because our metric matches the world metric, out in the world, two major reasons why marriages fail. First is adultery. The second is financial instability. So what's there to look up to? Unfortunately. Anyway, this is a never-ending topic. I hope you're satisfied. Okay, let's end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Thank you.